Welcome to episode 37 of All of Your Business. These are the vulnerable, authentic, and unfiltered stories of business owners whose currents raise tides that lift all of our businesses, communities, and dreams. On this episode, we're speaking with Azure Addo, owner of Gallery Go-Go, and Ursula Barton, owner of Jailbreak Studios. And now your host, Michael Jonas.
Thank you both for being here, Azure and Ursula. I'm really happy to have you on All Your Business. So there's so much to talk about, but first I want to know what you do and how you both know each other. So tell us about those things.
You first.
Okay. So I started Gallery Go-Go about 5 months ago. And when I was starting it out, I came in knowing very little about running a gallery. So I was, you know, putting out feelers in the community for, you know, who other people trusted. And Ursula's name came up a few times. And so I reached out to her, and I didn't realize quite how busy she was at the time. But even though she was going through like this massive restructuring, making her space a collective, she made time to meet with me. And we talked about all sorts of things. And she agreed to be the first show in my space with the Jailbreak Collective. And it was great. It was just so fortunate for me to be able to work with this incredibly talented, generous group of artists who were so supportive for my first show, because, you know, I was learning along. And so, yeah, that's how I got to know Ursula.
And then Ursula, tell us about Jailbreak.
Jailbreak is this constantly changing passion project of mine. I've been in this studio space for almost a decade, and I've been making a living as a full-time artist for also the same amount of time. So that would be the first part of why I'm so busy. But I wanted to create more community originally with other female artists that I met from art school and just doing art events and being in the community, because we were all dealing with a lot of the same sexism in our careers. Even though we were in very different fields of creative work, we were all had very similar stories. So Jailbreak was originally Jailhouse Studios. And I brought in women that I admired and work in different mediums than I do. And we built out the whole space and created a hallway gallery in the entryway so that we could curate it. We each took a season to curate and show artists in the community that we were excited about, and had First Friday parties, and just really wanted to build more of a community and business and art community as well, focused mostly on female artists. But as we grew and changed, and it was mostly a working space for us, I wanted to expand into retail and share what I've learned. Being a professional artist for me has just meant a lot of failures and learning from it, and pivoting constantly and creative problem solving over and over and over again. So I wanted to save artists from making the same mistakes I made. And one of the parts of that made it possible to be full-time was product lines and reproduction work and offering different price points. So I'm really passionate about helping artists develop their brand in a way that is more approachable for the everyday person. So that mission came to Jailbreak Studios, and we focused more on retail, and we still have the gallery and First Fridays. But then COVID came, and it was pretty much handed it to me, and I had to pivot in a full circle and started the collective model in August of 2021. And now we have 11 members. And so, and we now focus on not only female makers, but we are building a platform for historically underrepresented voices. So all of our members are BIPOC, LGBTQI plus or femme.
That's awesome. That's very cool. And how do you get the name Jailbreak, and how do you get the name Gallery Go-Go?
Jailbreak for me, it was the space, the history of the space. It was built for the Southeast Police Department to stable their horses. And we had, there was an additional jail cell built into the back room that's windowless. And so it was important to me to acknowledge the history of the building and how we were shifting the use of the space through art and creativity.
Yeah, and I got the name Gallery Go-Go from Felix Gonzalez Torres is an artist that I really admire. And one of his art installations was a little go-go dancing platform, really simple little box in the middle of a gallery with lights around it. And this was at the height of the AIDS crisis in the 80s. And every day at a certain time, man would come in and dance on it in a pair of like silver lame shorts with like headphones on. And there was just something, I don't know. I just found that really inspiring somehow in, to me, just the simplicity of it and the guts and the kind of radical joy of it, because I felt called to open this art space, even though I didn't have experience. And I actually am not like naturally a very social person even, you know, so it was a real stretch. I just felt like, you know, this is my neighborhood. I want to be downtown. I had spent all this time researching, you know, how artists could be more sustainable, because I'd lost my jobs. I lost my museum job. I lost my teaching job. I was just at home with my kid in our apartment. And
also,
I live in a,
job.
Yeah. I live in a subsidized building here in Portland. And just by chance, when I was doing my laundry, I saw this flyer that said, you know, do you need more schooling? You know, at the Stein Foundation will give you a scholarship to go back to school. And I was like, wow, I've always wanted to, there was the, like these class, I love classes. I take classes all the time for fun, but there's these ones that were from Sotheby's Institute of Art that I'd always looked at, but they're so expensive. And they have these really niche classes, like how to start a gallery, you know, how to, you know, the business of art kind of things. And so I used that, I got the Stein scholarship, and I used it to learn how to run a gallery, at least how to get the basics down. And then Accelerate Women's Business Fund helped me in a lot of different ways. I was part of a cohort group, which was like a group of women that supported each other throughout the pandemic. And it was really interesting because we hadn't seen each other for like 6 months in person. We'd only seen each other's heads, you know, and it was such a fun experience to finally see each other. But, you know, I called on so many different people in the community, even to get that scholarship. It took tons and tons of people vouching for me. And, yeah, anyway, so go, 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 I guess it felt like empowering.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, go, go in terms of living your best life, being free, and then also going forth with your goals and just what happens, happens one day at a time. So, you know, I would love to know, you kind of alluded to it, Ashura, a little bit, what you both did before having your own gallery. I mean, I presume you both were somewhat created prior, but you had various other jobs. So can you talk a little bit about that, like what you did prior?
You can go first.
Oh, okay. I mean, before I started my art career, it was all service industry stuff. A lot of catering, and a lot of bartending, brunch service. And honestly, I use what I learned in the service industry in this town almost every day. Yeah. It taught me how to communicate with people from a lot of different backgrounds, with a lot of different needs and also levels of entitlement and communication styles, while also trying to create an experience of connection and service. So I'm really thankful for my time in the service industry, especially in Portland, because the caliber is so high. I worked in a lot of places I was proud to work at and love the people I worked with. And that's how I got started selling my work, honestly, as I was a brunch server, and the woman who curated the space who owned her own gallery in the Pearl. So I worked at this cafe in the Pearl, and, she couldn't fill February. And so they were like, oh, you graduated art school. Do you have some art you can hang in 3 weeks? I was like, sure, I'll make some right now. So I made a new body of work for that show, and it turned into the bridges of Portland for my bike commutes across the bridges to get to Northwest from Northeast, where I lived. And had some happy accidents on the way that inspired the process of how to make new work and work with ink. And then that show sold out in a few days. And that was a real wake up call to me that I was connecting with people visually for the first time, really. I mean, being a student wasn't the same experience. And then I also had the amazing opportunity to use it as market research, because I was serving these people food and they didn't know I was the artist. So I was eavesdropping constantly and could hear real honest feedback about my work, which meant a lot to me. And also I learned a lot from, because they had nothing to prove to me and felt really comfortable being very honest about it. So that transition quickly turned into being a part-time caterer, part-time artist, and grew my own brand to eventually stop working in the service industry, which I still missed a little bit. And I think that's why I got into retail, to be honest, is I like the human connection that comes with it. And I like meeting people from a lot of different backgrounds, and just having these small interactions is truly interesting to me. And it's a way more fun when you're the owner, because I can say and do whatever I want, and I could kick people out if they insult me. So it's like kind of the best of both worlds now.
I was actually going to say that it's pretty different when you're the owner than when you're
working. Yeah, it is way different. And
I'm a retired restaurant worker myself. I did about 10 years. So you definitely learn all about people and good things, bad things. But there's a lot of people to please. I mean, you have not just the customer, but coworkers, managers, leads. It's just on and on and on. So, yeah, it's good. It's good job training. It's good business training.
Absolutely.
Restaurant work. Azure, what about you? What did you do primarily before opening an art gallery?
So I mean, I did work in the service industry a long time ago. I was a waitress, a barista, and I worked in the music industry, like doing a little light bartending and, you know, waiting tables. I would say that the thing I learned the most was not letting people distract you, like, because I had to like focus. I would like go in my pattern and I would go in a circle, and I didn't let anyone break my circle. You know, I would go around and check on everything, and like, and I think that, you know, that's a good focus to take away. I don't know. Maybe everybody should work in the service industry if possible, because I feel like it is.
Absolutely. Just a better customer.
But my main work before, I got a scholarship to go to Oberlin College, which is that college that they show on Girls, if you've ever seen that show.
I've seen it on Girls.
Yeah.
I don't mind admitting to that. My fiance, Andy, he says that, you know, he's seen too much of Lena Dunham in just a couple episodes, so he can't watch anymore.
Yeah, I loved it. I don't know, like, you know, I came from a very rough background. And so going to like this private college was just, it was so fascinating. It was like completely different people and just the way that people connected with each other and communicated was, it just felt like another planet, you know, kind of. And it was really interesting. And I've always been somebody that just kind of keeps their head down and works like really constantly. And so I finished school in about three and a half years. And then I just like worked, like I would work like multiple jobs. I've always been like somebody that just loves working. And like I worked in a museum. I had a museum job in the day. I had a waiting job at night. There was one point where I had three jobs and I was just like, it was so like interesting and exciting to me. And then, you know, I was in Minneapolis and then I moved to New York City and I worked in some galleries. I worked at museums and, I was married for a while. I had a kid. I still have a kid who's 11 now. And I started a business when my kid was about three. It started out as like a product design company. Because I was on my own with my kid and, I needed something that I could do from home. So I designed this product that, I just cold called like New Seasons and Made in Oregon and made little presentations for them and got my product into their stores. And it was just me and my brother like manufacturing these like thousands of these little things that we sold there. They were like these little
the same thing.
It was wild. It was just like
I cold called them. It was like, greeting cards. Shall we?
I know. And nobody, it's so funny to me because no one would guess that there was just somebody with like thousands of these little wallets in their apartment, you know, that they were cranking out with their brother.
You raise a good point. And this is something I talk about with a lot of our artists, clients and musicians is I talk about your art as your business. And if you want to do this and this is your career, then you have to treat it like you would treat a business. So that involves admin and sales and overhead and, you know, kind of figuring all that stuff out. So, I guess my question or my next question for both of you is what's your thought on how to be both a creative person and a process oriented person? Like how do you do creativity and business and combine the two and not get too jaded into business, but also not get too, I guess, pie in the sky with art. You sort of have to merge both to be successful.
Well, I'm really interested in what Ursula says, so you can start.
For me, it was imperative for me to pay attention to how the nature of my own mind works. And so I started to pay attention to when I felt the most motivated and creative in my day so that I could capitalize on that and be the most productive of doing the creative work, making new pieces of art, designing new packaging, anything that was really visual and creative problem solving. And for me personally, that's in the morning. And so once I kind of cracked that code, that's when I'm going to be producing at my highest level. I would save all my emails, all of my invoices, all of the mundane stuff that I really didn't like and wasn't naturally gifted at. I would save it for after 3 p.m. and I would divide it into chunks and I would make a bunch of to-do lists. So I would just prioritizing what needs to get done and then allowing myself to be like, you know what, from 3 to 5 is when my creativity is dead, but I can still write an email. So I'm going to be creative from like 9 to 3 and then know that whatever I get done, it's still only going to be like 1 to 2 hours of boring stuff. And that was the motivation that got me through it, was just like, you have to send those invoices and to have those chunks of time that are, that naturally went with how I'm built and how my mind works and my preferences unlocked a lot of productivity for me and really helped me not have resentment for the business side, because I wouldn't find myself doing the business side of things 6 days a week. That has changed since COVID. COVID has thrown this out the window. I'm doing business like 12 hours a day just to exist. So this is how I got started. This is not reflected in COVID times. COVID times are insane. Small business owners are working themselves to death and doing so much work that is very, very hard. But before COVID, this is what worked for me to get my motivation and my business started, was really divvying up my time appropriately and keeping track of to-do lists pretty obsessively. I would say I'm an obsessive list maker. And that has helped me a lot to just see it and have a visual of like what I'm responsible for and all the makings of a decision or a commitment.
I'm saying I love the lists. I love lists. I love like time chunking. I work in like 20 minute bursts and like, it's just, I don't know. I love it. I love work. I just always want to be working. I do feel like it's, you know, like my favorite cars are the like manuals. And it does feel like switching into a different gear. You know, it can feel like it grinds a little bit to go from art, which, you know, I don't think of art as just like a fun thing. Like, it's interesting. It's super fascinating, but it's like really time consuming. And it's like, I'm thinking about the concept so much. And then I'm also trying to make it light in a certain way. It's just like, it's a lot of like this, like really fascinating tension, but it's almost like an asymmetric exercise or something where I'm like, it takes a lot. And so that kind of takes a lot. And then the business takes a lot, but I am super fascinated by both. I think I have the opposite though, where like, I feel a lot more creative at night, and in the morning I can like, just sort of like buzz through like tax things. And, I don't know. I do get a lot of satisfaction though, from just like in this job, like running this gallery, I just like all the artists that I have in there, I am really rooting for. And so anytime someone buys their work, it just, I feel so good. And I can like talk to the people about the artists and, you know, give them these like trivia bits that I know will delight them. And, it all feels good. Even paying out the artists feels good, even though, you know, it's not making a ton of money right now, but it feels so great to be able to be like, I get to pay them. Like, it feels like a gift kind of, you know, that I get to have this place and that it's actually functioning and people feel really grateful for it. So even though I've only taken one day off in the past 5 months,
2 years.
and I work 7 days a week, and I often work like 10 hours a day. It's just, I mean, it's wild, but I kind of feel like it feels like a social practice. It feels like, you know, there's something to this that's super interesting, and it's affecting my work in kind of an interesting way. Like, I'm now like, you know, painting myself doing business stuff, which is interesting. I don't know anybody else that does that. So I don't know. It's always,
well, it sounds like you've always been business oriented, but you haven't necessarily always had ownership or purpose.
Yeah.
And so now both of you kind of have both of those. You have a little bit of ownership, a little bit of purpose. And so you're right. When you do admin stuff or you do things that are just horribly boring, when you actually think of the person it's benefiting, or you think of the beauty of the art, or you think of the social movement, you're more likely to do it because you believe in the purpose. And it's less of a chore and more of this is part of, in order to move this forward, what I have to do. What would you say to someone who's an artist who they can't really decide if it's a hobby or if it's a career, and they kind of have this thought of like, what am I doing with this? And keep in mind, I mean, it's okay in life. I mean, I do many things. Like I have a law firm and a podcast and I do creative writing. And I love when people are sort of multi-potentialites and Renaissance men and women and do, you know, do all kinds of things. But there's also like, okay, you need to pay your bills and you need your bread and butter. So someone comes up to you and they're like, I'm an artist. This is a hobby. Should I make this into a career? What sort of advice or questions would you ask that person in order to determine what you say to them? You know, what kind of comments you give to them?
I mean, I think it depends on, okay, well, I would say the first thing that pops into my head is, I think it probably benefits most people to have a creative practice. I think it's a important part of processing for a lot of people, especially if you're, and if you're visual or you're musical or, you know, there's just all this information that you take in every day. And I think there's something very healthy about being able to externalize it and look at it, you know, in a certain way and like create something out of it. It makes life feel more interesting and purposeful. I think as far as like whether you want to make it a career, I think it has to light you up to connect with other people, because you're going to need that fire behind you to keep you pushing through all of the trials and tribulations of being an artist. But it's not an easy path. You know, it's not something that, it takes a lot of storytelling and a ton of discipline. And you really have to like kind of, shut out a lot of negativity. You've got to protect your practice. And you've got to work through times where, you know, either your work isn't, pleasing you or it's not pleasing the world. You know, it's just like art kind of, people are interested in certain things sometimes and other things other times. And, yeah, I think, but I love when other people connect with my work and I feel like I'm working on something that's important to me. I feel like I'm working something out. Also for me, I feel like as a mom and also a, you know, a solo parent, I feel like that's a, you know, that's just one kind of person that maybe hasn't been as represented in visual culture historically. And it's exciting to me to be a part of documenting the experience. So that kind of gives me a purpose. I don't know if somebody else has a purpose like that, that might put a fire behind them too.
Yeah. So it sounds like the question to ask them is, one, does this light you up or give you purpose? But two, are you ready to do all the business related things for this? And if you're not, then that may mean that you're not ready. Like you have to do what you two are doing and, you know, work day and night and take no for an answer, but keep asking. You know, you have to sort of face all odds, including a pandemic, right?
You have to hustle. Like there's no way around it.
Yeah. So what about you, Ursula? Like, what would you say to that person? Someone comes up to you and says, you know, hobby versus career. Give me some advice here. What should I do?
I would ask them how comfortable they are with risk. How comfortable they are with the unknown and how comfortable they are with being broke. Truly.
Yeah,
no, like it's a reality to it. We live in a capitalist society that is not educating our culture on the value of art. We just aren't. Like it's not built in to appreciating and putting your money towards valuing art. And so if you're going to be in this field, not only are you creating visuals and pieces of work that are attached to you, your humanity, and your experience, but you're also convincing an entire population to understand the value of this object you made. So it's a twofold business model where you're creating the object and then you're creating the demand, because the demand isn't where it should be. And certainly not with how much money people should feel comfortable buying something that will last for generations. And the function is to give them joy and connect them to their humanity and to give that human connection. Like that isn't how people talk about art with everyday people who didn't have the luxury to go to art school or didn't have the luxury to have a good education around art.
So well, they're not a trust fund baby.
Totally. And I'm uninterested in work. I mean, that was a really hard lesson for me to learn about the art world in general, going to New York for 6 weeks. And I mean, that isn't going to give you the New York experience, but like really starting to understand the connection of Wall Street and the art world and elitism and what it really is about and how it really functions and how people are truly investing in art to keep it in a storage unit, not to enjoy it.
Yeah.
That part of understanding the industry that I was trying to get into really helped me start to understand who I want my clients to be. I want to work with the people who just bought their very first house together and are investing in a piece of art as a couple for the very first time. I want to be that kind of the beginning of curious people who are interested in getting into the art world as patrons and want to feel comfortable, want to feel cool enough, want to feel like they can ask questions, because I think that's really important. I think we really need to welcome in more patrons in order to get artists paid for what they deserve. And so just, you're going to be broke for a while because that's a lot of hard work and it's a lot of doing the work of educating and creating at the same time simultaneously. And if you're not interested or able to sit with the discomfort of not knowing what your income is going to look like this year, and having to react and to creatively problem solve what it looks like. And when you get a really big project, to go talk to someone to help you figure out how to stretch that money out and how to save for your future, because those are things that are really necessary. And if money is a hard thing for you to talk about, if money is a hard thing for you to live without, I just don't recommend going into art, because in order for you to advocate for yourself, you need to value your time literally, and you have to be able to communicate with other people why that's how much it costs to get a mural or to get a painting.
Yeah, and that's really fascinating to me, because what it's saying is that as an artist, you have to be a salesperson, you have to be a marketer, you have to be good at branding, you know. And I think about, these are odd examples, but I think of like Katy Perry, like whether or not people think she's a good musician or not, she's a good businesswoman, you know. Or I think of like Andy Warhol back in the day, like going to parties and socializing, and, you know, it becomes a social contact and then it becomes an art sale later on. It's not like, here's my art. And
right.
That's kind of an interesting thing as well, that we're not just doing, putting out on the street, this is my art. We're also embedded into culture and community and to the people we want to sell to or not sell to. So what I really wanted to talk to you about next is how social action and community relate to art for you. We're in a really, not a great time in terms of hate crimes and racism and whatever else, but a great time in terms of whenever there's this kind of pain and strife, we have, you know, beautiful images of Breonna Taylor and resistance and death because of COVID. You have some of the best music and art comes from times like this, right? So I guess my question for you is, where are you at with your emotional involvement with society and community, and how does that sort of tie into art for you? And I know that's a really big question.
No, I can definitely start to answer it. I would say that, you know, art can be inspirational, optimistic, joyous, healing, funny, and connect people, but only if they can find it. And so I intentionally am in this mall on the second floor. I've worked in the art world, you know, somewhere behind the scenes or, you know, somewhere in museums, galleries, working for artists for about 20 years. And I was being in this shopping center downtown. I have the vastly most diverse group of people that come in. And I feel like this gives me a huge opportunity to actually have the work be seen and be helpful, and to involve a lot of different people. 2 days ago, I had a fashion show in my space, and I was telling you about it before. It was, you know, for the designer Jean-Pierre of Nkosi, and there was a intergenerational hip hop band, and it was just beautiful. It was so great. It was, there was like young and old people. There was just like this huge diversity of people. Like there were business owners, and there was, the main choreographer was incredible, and, you know, also works at Walgreens, you know, and like, it was just like all these different people bringing their talents, together. And I feel like I've got this massive space. And one of the nicest things about it was that I was seeing like people who've come in the last, like, you know, over the last 5 months, some people really latch onto it. You know, there was like a hip hop group where the members came in, and, you know, on and off, we've been talking about projects that they could do. And so I just like invited all these people. And then I felt like I was just kind of in the background, and I was watching them all talking to each other and, you know, talking about projects that they do. And it just felt really exciting. It felt wonderful to see people in real life again, together, building something together, you know? And I feel like that's my contribution, is like creating this infrastructure, creating like a space for a lot of different people. I don't know if that answers the question.
Yeah, no, it definitely does. I appreciate that story. And that's definitely true. I mean, art brings people together in whatever form. I mean, whether it's looking at a piece of art, whether it's music, whether it's dance. I mean, it's individual and group expression that also brings people to a place of what you were saying, various emotions. I mean, I know that listening to certain music or seeing certain art, I mean, you can totally transgress from either sadness to happiness. You can see a piece and you can feel pain. I mean, the fact that art can do that to you as an individual is so fascinating. So Ursula, what about for you? So from like a social justice or community perspective, what does art mean to you, and how do you have that tied to those things?
I think something that Azure and I have in common is that we've both understood poverty and the art world and being creatives, and are fighting to make art and purchasing art less classist and less elitist. And that's really important to me, and that's always been a mission of mine with my own brand, and why I got into making postcards and prints, so that I could have a $2 option for anyone who connects with what I'm making. That's really important to me and will continue to be important to me. And that's why I push the commodification of art, because I don't think it's diluting. I think it's actually more inclusive.
Mm-hmm.
I'm passionate about that. And so inviting more people from many different backgrounds to interact with art and to be in a gallery setting that feels welcoming and comfortable. That's important to both of us, I believe, and I think it shows through our spaces. And that's why we continue to have First Friday parties every single month, because we want it to feel casual and yet special and elevated at the same time, where you can come and just like have a free glass of wine, meet the artist, look at some art that's going to be up for a month, and really interact with your community. And you don't have to buy anything. But just being there means something, and it also helps build community. And then eventually, if you get to a place where you can afford a print or an original, you are connected to the people you're supporting with that money. And I think that's a really beautiful way to shift consumerism, and another thing I'm passionate about. So, I mean, I've always been pretty outspoken and opinionated, and part of activism has always been a part of my lifestyle, I would say, because it's really hard for me to exist in a system that isn't fully including everybody. That doesn't feel right to me. So I need to create a system that feels really comfortable and inclusive. And that's going to be a mission that I'll continue to work on for the rest of my life, because I just think you have better parties, you have better experiences, yeah, you have better conversations.
You have better art. Yeah. You have
better art. And so I think if art is not incorporating activism, I'm not sure if it is just decoration. Like, I think that the art part of it needs to be an honest reflection of your experience and your voice and the times that you're living in. And that authenticity resonates in other people. And that's what creates the connection and the community and starts to make people understand the value of art forms and music and visual arts. So I don't think I can separate the two, even though my commercial work is very non-threatening and doesn't seem like activism on the outside. So I had to lace my activism into how easily accessible things are and how environmentally conscious my manufacturing is. So like, even if my visual is not tied to activism, the way it's made and the price point that it's at has been thoughtfully created with activism in mind, because it's an extension of me and my beliefs, and I do need to make money. So let's make another outdoor bridge. I got to do both. So
you raised a really good point though, that, you know, art is often for the elite. It's been made for the elite, and it's often in a mansion or a state, or, you know, I don't know if one is the word, bid at high at an auction. And then there are people who don't talk about it in the sense of, I felt that art piece. It's like, oh, I own a Picasso. Well, that's great. But do you own it for a status, because you're able to tell your friends, oh, I own a Picasso? Or did you see that Picasso and it resonated with you? You know, so for certain people, I'm sure that's the case, but there's this question of, like what you were saying, art either put up, not really looked at, or hidden, you know, stored as like an investment, or purchased to tell other people that you own that piece as a status, but not as a recognition of actually feeling that or supporting the local artists. I'm just thinking of, I pulled it up online. There's an artist, her name is Jade Yasmin, and she is an African-American woman, and she's in LA. She painted Harriet Tubman, and her Harriet Tubman painting is like the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. And so seeing a young Black woman paint Harriet Tubman as she sees Harriet Tubman, you know, instead of all of the other paintings and things like that, I don't know why it does something to me. Right.
Yeah.
Like it makes me think about all sorts of things generationally, who she is, where she's going. If Harriet Tubman only knew that Jade had painted her, you know, so it's just, it's, that's the other thing is this, there's a storytelling component of not just the thing that's being painted and why that person was inspired, but, you seeing that art and tying it to the artist and understanding, okay, this was so meaningful. Harriet Tubman was so meaningful to her, and the accuracy and the feeling that she decided to make one of the most accurate paintings of Harriet Tubman. You know, so I find that very interesting because she could have painted anything or anybody. And I always find whoever people pick, you know, like the presidential portraits, like who they pick. And I don't know if you've had the pleasure of going to the DC museums, the Smithsonian's, there's the portrait gallery, and you can see Michelle Obama's painting and Barack Obama's painting. And they both picked African American artists, and those paintings are absolutely stunning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I like what you're saying too about the commodification, because a lot of people might say to you, oh, well, that's cheapening things. But that's the thing where people say, oh, you like the band, they got popular, I don't like them anymore. You know, wouldn't you want someone to enjoy the artist that you're enjoying? And,
but yeah, can I just say that, you know, what's weird is that even though everybody says that, oh, you know, everyone's going to say this, almost no one has ever said that to me. No one has ever criticized me for making a print or a postcard, you know, I mean, that I can even remember.
No one said it to my face. But.
Yeah, nobody said it to my face, at least, you know? So really, like, if, I mean, you know what I mean? It's just kind of, it's funny because it's like this, like, specter of criticism that's actually not there that much. We're used to postcards and prints and stuff. Like, and I really like that there's a term that I learned when I was teaching kids was scaffolding. I love the idea of scaffolding experiences for people. Sometimes it's like, I actually have to go out of my gallery and be like, oh, we have like gifts and stuff in here. You want to come in? You know, 'cause like there is a little bit of hesitation even just because the name gallery is in, you know, in the title. And I put that in mindfully because I wanted artists that showed their work with me to be able to put it on a grant, you know, application and to look a little fancier. So yeah, but like, I'd be like, oh, like, you know, we have this and we have like, I actually even sell hot sauce now in the gallery because the label is designed by an artist that I really like. So it's kind of like you're scaffolding, you're being like, oh, you like that label? Well, then, you know, that label's a lot like this print, and this print's a lot like this painting. And, you know, it's just kind of like you're like slow, feeling comfortable, feeling like part of everything.
Yeah. What's your thought on art that's publicly displayed? So, you know, we saw this a lot with all of the Black people who were murdered, but also, you know, like Banksy, for example, there's, you know, the girl with the balloon on a wall, and you walk by and you see it. So this sort of idea of like art being in the public realm, just open. And I know in Portland, we have the most gorgeous murals.
Yeah. We have a lot of really.
I mean, mural painting is a pretty big portion of how I make a living. So I obviously advocate for murals. They pay my bills and they make the city look beautiful. It's also exactly in line with making art accessible. Just being around art is an important experience in just sparking your imagination and your concept of what's possible. So I think public art is really important to remind people that out of the ordinary can be rewarding, and that it can be the different parts of your visual that are actually the most stimulating and exciting, and to really start to investigate that emotion and that feeling and that reaction. And I think for me especially, public art confronts me with that when I least expect it. I'll be like riding my bike, and even I'll just see a tag, and if it makes me laugh, like there was a tag across the street from my studio that said "Hi, Mom," but it was H-I-G-H, Mom. And my mom works in the back studio space at at Jailbreak, and we both just had such a giggle together as like a mom and a daughter. But stuff like that, that was just so simple, but it was a fun moment to share with my mom about like a tag on a wall, you know, and stuff like that, that just kind of puts you in these scenarios that you couldn't anticipate. I think activates your mind and your imagination in a really important way, no matter where you're coming from.
Your bridge murals are beautiful, by the way.
Thank you. I appreciate that. It's really, really fun to paint big. Like what I suggest all artists give it a shot if they have an opportunity to, or even just a friend who has a wall that they're willing to let you, because it takes a lot of courage. You just like push yourself, and you have to be like, no, I am going to make it this big. But it's really, it's an exciting and athletic experience that I think.
That's a good test of friendship if they say yes to a mural on their living room.
Yeah, I think it is. A good friend of mine from high school actually let me paint her living room wall. It was like my second mural.
So where do you see your businesses going in the next, you know, couple of years, like in terms of growth and goals and things like that?
So, you know, Ursula was talking about activation. I'm really committed to downtown. This is the neighborhood that I live in. And I like working here. I feel like there's a lot of opportunity to activate space creatively. I'd like to be part of helping downtown recover from the pandemic through art in a lot of different ways. And I've got lots of schemes. I have lots of plans about how I want to like activate like empty spaces. I have this idea about how I want to use like those sandwich boards all over the city to like be, you know, exhibitions. I'm excited about doing things like scavenger hunts. I just want to like, I want to reach a lot of different people in different ways. And, I'd like the gallery to, be able to serve a lot of different artists. I'd like the process to become more streamlined, bring more people in. I'd like to hire somebody else eventually, so I'm not there 7 days a week. But yeah, I mean, bigger picture, I think there is a lot of space right now. And I'd like to use what I'm doing at Pioneer Place as a model that other shopping centers and malls could use. I've been approached by other shopping centers that were interested in what I'm doing. I'd like to document the process, you know, the successes and the missteps, the things that worked and didn't work. I would like dream collaboration would be to, you know, write down Ursula's experiences too, and like make something like how to start a art gallery and collective. And like, this is what you do. Like, you know, like how you were saying, like, what would you tell somebody who wanted to figure out whether they wanted to be a professional artist? You know, like there aren't a lot of roadmaps in the arts, and a lot has changed too. Just very recently, there's opportunities that weren't here before. And there's also challenges that weren't here before. So just kind of like gathering all that data together, and trying to get together with other people who are imagining the future of the arts and imagining the future of shopping malls and imagining the future of downtown Portland, and kind of like, you know, trade information. I joined an action table that Ursula and I met with Mona, who's the policy advisor to Commissioner Rubio. to talk about, you know, things that the city is going to do to benefit the arts and downtown and like music events and things like that. I want to keep working closely with the city. I want to keep being a hub and a place for people when they visit Portland. I'd like this to be, you know, the gallery to be a place that people look forward to visiting and taking their moms and like, you know, feeling comfortable and getting excited about. And I really am looking forward to workshops there. Jailbreak was awarded a grant from Regional Arts and Culture Council to do workshops. And they're going to at least start out at Gallery Go-Go doing it. And I'm super excited because I really, really want like a robust workshop schedule that will help people not only make creative work, but also help them with the business side of art so that they can have a thriving creative practice.
Yeah, all of those are wonderful. And please invite me to either participating in, I don't know, Scavenger Hunt or doing some giant art installation. That sounds really cool too. And yeah, when my mom comes and visits again, I'll have to take her to see you as well.
Yeah, please do.
Yeah, she, you know, she's already done, there's only so many times you can see the International Rose Garden, right? So. Mm-hmm. Ursula, what about you? What about the next couple of years? What are your goals?
Immediately, we as a collective, we're really excited to invest in our art classes and workshops and collaborate with Gallery Go-Go. We have artists from so many different mediums in the collective, from like screen printing. Right now, we're offering resin classes and jewelry making, and I'm excited to get back into doing an ink tutorials and classes. So I think that because education is important to all of us and just expanding our brands, but also expanding our community and our interaction, that is immediately what we're going to be focusing on with this grant that we were awarded. But also we want to grow the collective. We have a few more spots available since we just started in August. And you can apply on our website if you want to join. So just kind of rounding out our community, and then our lease is up here in July. And at the moment, we're talking about trying to find a space that can accommodate more art studio space so that we can really bring in the art making process and demystify the creative process for people who are curious about it, to make it a little less intimidating, because I think that's really important to inviting a new generation and a lot of new populations into interacting with art and buying art and understanding the value of the artist in society. And so at the moment, it's just my art studio that's in the middle of the storefront. And I'm often working on new commissions while people are shopping, because I like having that conversation about like, oh, how much does this cost? And it's like, well, this is how much you should pay for an original painting that takes a month to create. You have to mm-hmm. keep that person alive for a whole month. Like, just having those conversations are what I'm really passionate about, and I'm excited to look forward to a larger space that can accommodate more creative processes under one roof while also interacting with the direct reproductions of the work you're seeing created. That is a part of our business model that I'm very excited to expand upon with a whole team of incredibly uniquely talented individuals who have a lot of different skills between all of us.
That's okay. Awesome.
Can I also add to, as you were talking, yeah, I'm super excited about that. And I wanted to also add that Scrap is, I want them to be a big part of my future too. They're my nonprofit partner. And they, we're just always planning interesting things together. We have lots of plans for, you know, teaching people how to reuse materials and, repurposing, and, also working with LGBTQ plus kids, and bringing in, community leaders around that.
Yeah, that would be great. Yeah. And I think, you know, and all the goals, I'm hearing the same thing, that it comes down to community and purpose and, you know, bringing people together. So, so I have the five questions for you. I ask everybody that's a podcast guest. So I think I'll ask each one and then you both can give your answer. So the first one is, what's a quote or a mantra you live by?
This can't last forever.
Yeah.
I think that helps me value things in the moment and also get through hard situations.
Yeah.
So that's an outlook and just an overall vibe that has kind of helped me through the pandemic, especially. It's just, you know, you're not going to be doing this forever. So
yeah, no, that's a good one.
You can always be changing and it'll always be different.
And what about you, Azure? What's a quote or a mantra that you live by?
I mean, there's so many. I like, cause I store those, like I need them. I hang on to them all the time. And there's so many, like Maya Angelou and Andy Warhol have great ones. But I think something that I kind of just tell myself a lot of the time is like, good enough. 90% is, you know, is done. It's like, just keep it moving. You know, I just feel like, just like get it out there, learn from it. Clean up the mess, do it better, you know, because you can just get stuck.
Keep on moving. That's a good one. Keep on trucking. Keep on.
Yeah.
Okay. What's your favorite childhood memory?
One that sticks out to me that my first memory of being proud of myself was when I was, I think around 6 or 7, and I watched a documentary about a pig sanctuary that saved pigs, and it blew me away, and I was so like, hell yeah, let's save some pigs, and like really motivated and moved by this documentary on PBS about this like wacky woman who had this pig sanctuary. And so I created like a juice bottle with a snout that you could put money in the snout and collect money. And I went to the entire neighborhood collecting money and sent it to this woman. Feed her pigs. And I raised over $100, and I was really proud of myself, and I enjoyed the whole process. And
there you go.
I love this now.
It's using art and activism, and what a creative cash receptacle.
Recycling, reusing. I've been a nerd my whole life, so I was like, how can I bring it all together?
You may have something there with like, was it paper mache? How did you make the?
So I drank a lot of this like very razzleberry juice when I was a kid, mixed with water because my parents are hippies. And so I used like the lid of one of those coin machine bubbles, and it fit right on top of where the juice lid was. So I slit out holes in it where you could shove dollar bills into the snout, and then made like paper ears and painted it pink, and made it very clear to the whole neighborhood who the weirdest child was. The Martins.
And then Azure, what about you? What's your favorite childhood memory?
Oh gosh. I mean, I just feel I keep thinking about them and they're not generous at all. Like, okay. So this is a weird one, but I remember, so I grew up in, part of where I grew up was a place called Duluth, Minnesota. It's kind of a steel town that kind of like lost its industry. And, there was this place that you could go that was like, all our clothes came from this center where there was a free room, kind of like the bins, but like just like a bunch of clothes there. And I would go there and I would like take like a few clothes apart. Like Guess jeans were super popular in the 80s. And so I would like take off the little Guess label and I would like stick it on with glue onto like jeans that fit me. And I would like move things around and like reconfigure clothes. And me and my sister were really into that. Just sort of like, I don't know, just like messing with labels and these things that it felt very powerful and bigger than us, but like you could just rip it apart and make your own thing. And I don't know why that just kind of stands out as like a liberating thing where it's just like, you're kind of buying into capitalism and like the aura around objects, but then you're also kind of messing with it.
Yeah. That's awesome. And then the next question is, what's a failure or mistake you made that actually turned out for the best?
Mine definitely has to be what started my bridge work. When I first started painting for the show I talked about earlier in the cafe I worked at, I had invested a bunch of my tip money in this really expensive ink that you could only buy from one distributor downtown, and then like over $100 on really nice watercolor paper. And I shared a studio space in the active studio spaces in the Pearl. So it was like a cubicle that I shared with another person, and we would have, it was so small that we would have to coordinate being in it just one person at a time. Mm-hmm. And it was always a mess. And I turned around too fast and I had spilled this whole bottle of ink across all of the pages of watercolor paper that were laid on the ground. And I was so distraught and mad at myself for being a slob, and all the shame that comes with that flooded in. And then I just started reacting to it and started pouring water on top of the ink spills and pushing it around with a great big sumi brush and just trying to find interesting patterns in the ink and how it reacted to water, and didn't have anything in mind, just trying to make it look interesting to me. And I took a break and went across the street to have a drink at the bar and just kind of like decompress about my mistakes. And when I came back, I just started lifting up all the pages, and it was like mostly dry, but so these drips kind of started coming down. And then I went back into it and started drawing my bike commutes from the photos that I had been taking of the sunrise across the bridges. And that started the whole bridge series that started my career. And I definitely, that turned out for the best for sure. And I was mortified and really hard on myself for quite a few days before I solved that problem. I remember thinking there was no coming back from that. And now it's how I love working that way, because I'm totally out of control for the first half of the process and just have to let the medium express itself and react to it. And then I get to be an obsessive control freak at the end with all the detail work on top. And so it feels way more healthy than the contrived control freak that was my work before that.
Yeah.
I've told some version of that story to so many people too about your work. But
that's really fascinating. That's, and it's almost like you're giving yourself time for mistakes because you know they could lead to great things.
Yeah. I just have a lot of passion for ink too. I think that ink is capable of doing so many beautiful reactions and blending options. I'm just like such a nerd about this medium, and I want to give it space to express itself and react to it. So I think it also just comes with a deep passion for the medium that I've chosen to work with for the rest of my life, probably.
And Azure, what about you? What's a failure or mistake that actually turned out for the best?
Moving to Portland. I don't know. Like I was living in New York and I was getting burned out on all the jobs that I had. And I kind of impulsively moved here. And then I moved here and it just felt like it never stopped raining. It was just like buckets of rain coming down. And my boyfriend broke up with me and moved away. And I was just like, where am I? You know, I was so far away from anybody I knew and it was just raining constantly. And I was like, I'm just going to like, you know, I'll just be here for like a year or something. But now it's been 15 years and I've made this whole life here and I can't imagine living anywhere else right now. Like, I love it. So
that's awesome. That worked out. How are you complaining about the rain, but you had New York weather?
Yeah, right. I don't know. Maybe it was just the situation. It just really, the rain was intense. I mean, it was beautiful here though. Like it was so gorgeous, especially coming from New York where it was very gray and seeing even the moss. Like I used to get sort of hypnotized looking at the moss when I was first here. But yeah, the rain, it was just an especially rainy season. But yeah.
The next question is, what issue or issues keep you up at night?
Money.
There's so many. That to-do list is also constantly in my head. But on a broader scale, I mean, for sure, climate change. I mean, I'm sure everybody has that one. But yeah, I think climate change and also if I'm utilizing my time to serve my community, I want to make sure that how I demonstrate my values is communicated directly through my actions. And so trying to focus on doing that efficiently and accurately keeps me up at night for sure.
What about you? Oh, you said money. You
ain't money. I mean, yeah, it's like, of course there's all, you know, lots
I'm
of social
kid,
issues.
So I, yeah. I can't imagine being an artist. I mean, they're expensive.
Yeah. Right, they're expensive. I think it's because I'm a mom, you know, and I just like, I really want to have this platform for artists, you know, including myself. And I love it so much. And it's just sort of like, you know, it's like this big, like, beautiful entity that I have to, you know, keep taking care of. And I love taking care of it. And, you know, I love taking care of my kid too, but it's like, yeah, it takes a lot of energy.
Yeah. We're almost done, I promise. So the next one is, this is a fun one. Who's your favorite pop star or band?
Living or dead?
Either will work.
Oh, okay. There's a lot.
Yeah, there's so many good ones.
There's a lot that influenced me growing
up. Give us a couple.
I mean, I grew up with Tina Turner playing my entire childhood. So
yeah.
Tina Turner was like a huge part of growing up was we would, my mom played that record every weekend for sure. And just her whole vibe was fun and exciting and everything. So I think Tina Turner would be the most influential.
Yeah, I like Tina Turner a lot. Did you see the documentary that came out?
I did. Yeah, yeah. I saw it when it came out. It was really fascinating, and so sad that her husband had such a continued impact on her brand.
Yeah, Tina Turner's great. Give me some other people. Are you into The Cure? Are you into, like, I personally love, like, 80s kind of new wave music. Sometimes cheesy songs I get made fun of for.
I mean, I'm kind of a music person. Like, I love, especially live music. I love feeling it. Like, having that hip hop band in the small space was just so transportive. But I know people say this all the time, but I really enjoy a lot of different music and I'm always fascinated by it. And one of the goals I have is to not be stuck in an era, you know? So I'm always trying to listen to new things, even if they sound kind of jolting at first. Like, I just try to stay receptive and I try to listen to a really wide variety. Like, I love instrumentals. I love country music. I love punk and, all different varieties of hip hop. But I would say that the pop star that probably I feel guided by is probably Dolly Parton. I like that she just has her own really iconic style. I like that she has been really community minded, that she's done a lot of interesting collaborations. And I like that she's had this partner that, you know, she's had a,
I think his name's Carl.
Yeah. And he's just like a landscaper or something. And he's like complete, he has his own life and his own deal. And she has her own life, you know, and like, I don't know, there's something just kind of nice about it. I feel like she made life work for her, you know, in her own way.
I feel like she's a really good person. I mean, not only did she invest in the vaccine process early on, she has that child literacy program where they've donated millions and millions of books. So, I mean, they say, you know, all celebrities do it, but like some people just do it for a tax break. You know, I actually feel like she invests in things she cares about.
Yeah, and she's funny and she's over the top, but like she doesn't seem like, I don't know, she seems grounded in a certain way too. I just like her.
Yeah.
I like that she doesn't care. Like she knows who she is. Like she says, like, I wanted to be the town whore and now I am.
Yeah.
That's some female power right there.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can be whoever you want. You can look however you want.
I like
it's funny because she, you know, but the whole thing is the whole entire time she's been an incredible businesswoman. She's been involved with the entire music production process and the business side of things. I mean, not just music, but to own an entire theme park. There's a lot that goes on with that, right?
She transformed herself over and over and over again. And for a lot of those reasons, I really loved Prince too.
Yeah, my sister dated Prince.
What? Like,
yeah.
Is your sister Sheila E?
No. So we're from Minneapolis and my sister's short and beautiful and, you know, she was really in the scene for a while. And yeah, they dated for a short time and she said that Prince was just a really, really nice person. Like, just really fun to be around, so.
Very, very talented.
I'm so glad to hear that. This whole time, I was like, he seems like a really wonderful person.
Yeah.
So that is about it. I just have one last thing is give a shout out to someone in the community who you think is doing a great job that you want to say hi to, and then tell people how they can find you, how they can get involved with your businesses.
I want to give a shout out to the artists that I'm showing right now. They are both moms, both like incredible parts of the community and like just really singular artists, Arta Powers and Mel Christie. They're showing right now at Gallery Go-Go. And then I'd like to shout out Jailbreak Collective. And they are also always showing at the gallery too. And you can find my gallery on the second floor of Pioneer Place on the corner of 4th and Morrison. It's like right across from the Nike store. And it's open Monday through Thursday from 11 to 7, and Friday and Saturday until 8, and Sunday until 6. So there's really no excuse not to visit. It's like almost open all the time. So
I'd also like to shout out Azure and Gallery. It's rare to find people who demonstrate the belief of creating communities so clearly and so purely, and I really appreciate it when I can come in contact with people who are passionate but also passionate about sharing. So also a shout out to the members of the collective, because I wouldn't exist without this transition because of COVID. So all the members are incredibly talented, and I feel really lucky to be in community with artists from all different backgrounds and mediums. And I'm excited about what we're building together as a team. And you can find us on 9th and Taylor in the Buckman neighborhood. Our address is 910. And we're having a holiday market this Sunday. If your mom's in town this Sunday and you want to take her somewhere that isn't a rose garden, hey, love, we're doing a holiday market, and Galleria Gogo will be there too. Mm-hmm. And then you can check out our website if you want to join our collective or see what classes we're going to start putting up there, collaborating with Gallery Gogo.
That's wonderful. I really enjoyed talking with both of you, and I love your commitment to community and the purpose and the social justice. And then also, I'm just enjoying, you're both fangirling each other, and the whole rising tide lifts all boats is definitely true. We need each other as a community more than ever. So I'm really happy to see people collaborating in that way and pushing each other's dreams forward, I think is a really beautiful, valuable thing. So thank you for being on the podcast. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Of course, take care.
Yeah, you too.
Bye.
A very big thank you to Azure and Ursula for being on this episode of the podcast. For more information about the galleries featured in this episode, visit gallerygogo.com and jailbreakpdx.com. Be sure not to miss any of our upcoming guests by subscribing to the podcast on your favorite streaming service. You can also visit alloftyourbusinesspodcast.com for previous episodes, custom gear, and if you happen to know anybody that you think would be a great fit for the podcast, click our contact page and let us know.